This is side one of tape two of the July 26, 1986 interview with Geraldine Marjoram and her son, John Gavigan Jr. The interviewer is David Taylor.
Let's see now, we were talking a minute ago about when you got those mullet, didn't know what to do with them, and then learning later on how to prepare things like mm-hmm. that. Were there other things like that? Other types of food that you weren't familiar with?
Oh, yes, indeed. Shrimp. I wasn't. The only shrimp that I ever had seen were canned shrimp. My sister Christine loved them, and I'd turn my nose up at them in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. The canned shrimp. And I knew nothing about seafood. But then when I learned to like it, boy, I love seafood to this day. Mm-hmm. But I remember Mr. Gavigan's fish chowder. He could make a fish chowder taste like a feast for kings. I'm not kidding mm-hmm. you. And he would just fry out white bacon and onions. And he'd have in 3 or 4 potatoes, put in a pot, and a can of tomatoes, or either fresh tomatoes. And fry his onion out in that white bacon, and then he'd put his fish in, and just before the potatoes were done, he'd dump that white bacon with the onions over into that chowder. Mm-hmm. And boy, it was really good. Mm-hmm. I liked that. There were some things, I'm not overly fond of devil crabs, but boy, I could really eat just boiled crabs. Mm-hmm. I liked those. And I liked lobsters. But I could fix a lobster salad, but I couldn't, and I never fixed devil crabs. I never did. I was too lazy. I like them all right, but. And then shrimp Perlow. Oh, boy. Shrimp Perlow, here again, we go back to onions and bell pepper. You cook rice, and you put tomatoes in it. And let it kind of simmer down. Well, then, again, I fry up bell pepper and onions and put it over in there and put my shrimp in there for about 5 or 10 minutes, because it doesn't take shrimp, when they're boiled or steamed, it doesn't take them very long to cook. And I wait about the last 5 to 10 minutes, and stir it up real good. And that's real good. Now, that's what we call shrimp Perlow, what I call shrimp Perlow. There are all kind of ways of fixing it. Some people even throw, I think, chicken giblets over in there. Well, I didn't want to do it that way. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, this book might have some. I don't care if you copy some of these recipes out of here. Doesn't matter. This right here.
Now, what is Donax?
That is, it's in a shell, a tiny shell. John can tell you better than I can. Mm-hmm. I know I ate some one time that Tiki fixed, and I didn't care about it. Mm-hmm. I didn't care about her fried squid either. No, I didn't do that. And this clam, now I love clam chowder. I prefer the Manhattan kind to the, what's that other called, the white kind, Maine?
Maine or New England style.
New England style. I preferred that. And now this, I know this is good. You can just look at that and tell that's good.
Yeah. Now, I see you've got the seafood casserole number 2 on page mm-hmm. 171, marked Mayport. Now,
because Ethel Thompson is Mud Thompson's wife.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I've got some in here, believe it or not.
Have
but, yeah, let me see. Oh, boy, I had 219. Of course, mine, now this. As a matter of fact, I got this off of a box of wild rice, I think, one here. But this is delicious. That is really good. Of course, that has no seafood. Mm-hmm. And then I think the other one. This. Now, that has no seafood. You could throw it in there if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. And then I've got a couple of cake recipes in here. Mm-hmm. But now, one of Mayport, Dial Johnson, who used to live in Mayport, he's dead and gone, bless his heart. He belonged to this historical society. He helped get the thing I guess you've seen it there at Jacksonville mm-hmm. Beach, the old yeah. train engine. He helped get that started. He was in on it from the very beginning. Then Dial run a little grocery store in Mayport. Now, Dial is not originally from Mayport, but he came there, I believe, after World War II. Mm. He might have been there prior to that. I don't know.
We've talked a fair amount about fishermen living in Mayport, and still it's a very prominent occupation. Mm-hmm. What other types of jobs did people have who lived down there in Mayport when you moved down there?
Well, Country Powell had the town drugstore. That's was the meeting place. And it was right next door to the post office.
Mm-hmm.
Nora Brown was the postmistress. When I went to Mayport in 1940, well, shortly after 1945, I forget the woman's name that was postmistress before her, but Nora Brown was postmistress. She was postmistress when John was lost. She still lives in Mayport. She lives right next door to the little church there, the Presbyterian Church.
Now, her father was a pilot, was he? I think someone told me.
No, Nora's father was a carpenter.
Oh, yeah.
His name was Joe. Hi, Jet. What was Nora's daddy's last name? Joe who? That was a carpenter.
Oh, no.
Oh, nice I'm sorry. You haven't met him, have you, Johnny? I'm sorry. Hulbert. Hulbert.
Yeah.
His name was Joe Hulbert. And he was a carpenter, and he could really build you anything. They found that poor soul dead among all of his bottles. And then Amy Parnell's mother and father owned that restaurant before she did. Their name was Mayer. This Tony Mayer that I brought you that write-up about him building that shrimp boat, mm-hmm. he called it Endless Hours. Well, his mother and father owned that little old place. It was just, she had tables in there where you were served family style and benches, wooden benches. And then Amy inherited from my mother,
mm-hmm.
and she built it up, you know, had the restaurant built, and then she sold out.
Have people been taking people deep sea fishing out of Mayport for a long time, or is that relatively
for as near as I know? Yeah. As near as I can remember, in the summer, I'd say from they'd start about April, they wouldn't come in March usually because of the winds.
Mm-hmm.
But long about April up until about September. I don't remember too many of the party boats at that time. My children were friends with some of the children whose daddy owned a party boat, and they were redhead children.
You don't remember who owned them?
No, John. Is that you remember
folks.
That yeah. had that had the redhead children?
No, Joe Bill and Irma Bill, an old man Joe Bill that was a merchant mariner. They owned the winter boats. They
mm-hmm.
were party fishing boats. And that's back when they used the wooden-type spools with twine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would handline back in those days. There was no such thing
it's
as
okay.
rods
pick
and
it up. Yeah.
But you'd get a bucket, and you would get a wooden, like, four-cornered spool, you
yeah.
know, flat,
yeah.
and that's the way you fished, was with that and about 16 ounces of lead. There's no such thing as rod and reels. And then there was Bill Pasco.
I remember
there,
Bill, yeah,
and,
Captain Pasco.
Ernie Wade.
Who was the man that came from down south that had the redhead
Stu
children?
Loveland.
Yeah, Loveland.
His
mm-hmm.
boat was the Melody. Matter of fact, right now they own resorts over in St. Thomas. They have a resort over there, a
mm-hmm.
hotel and marina and all that.
Hmm.
Okay. That's when fishing was good.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want any of my boys to fish, and they all love it.
Mm-hmm.
They really do. Not for a living.
Yeah.
Praise the Lord.
Yeah.
We've all done it. Off and on.
Off and on, yes, but you don't, you're into something else. You know something else. Like your dad worked for the engineers and government engineers, and he just couldn't stand it.
What kind of commercial fishing did you do, John?
You know, just shrimping,
mm-hmm.
like getting on boats here and going down around the Horn, they call it, and up into Fort Myers, Key West, then over to Texas and the Dry Tortugas, Mexico, and you know, Corpus Christi, Brownsville, Campeche, you know, those type places.
Hmm.
I did that a couple of years ago for a summer, and I enjoyed it, but I was ready to get off after about 4 or 5 months of
mm-hmm.
it. You know. It's pretty monotonous being out there all the time.
You'd be surprised at, he can tell you some tales that they've told him since he's been grown about the older fishermen there in Mayport. But I remember John and Tommy Atkins and I were going downstate. Mr. Gavigan let us use his car. And I was to put them out, and they were to bring a boat back up. And we stopped in St. Augustine, and Tommy Atkins started flirting with this little waitress. And he says, if I give you my name and telephone number and my address, will you write to me and will you call me? She said, sure. And you know, he wrote another man's name down, another fisherman, Hilton Florence. He did. He did. I'm sitting there like this, you know. I told him about Gertie.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I told him about me.
Did you tell him about Leon Canova?
Oh.
Leon Canova, yeah, about, you know, Leon had a boat called the Molly and Me.
He saw a picture of that.
He has a son there in Mayport right now, Bubba Canova, who you should talk to if you haven't.
Yeah.
These are for real Mayport people.
Yes, sir. He's a Menorcan.
It just kills me to see sometimes, like I saw in your article, nothing against the guy that you talked to, but these are all transients that come in, and all of a sudden they're from Mayport, you know. Mm-hmm. And you need to talk to some of the real Mayport people.
Yeah, that haven't died.
Lies, you know, some good stories. Because,
sure.
Leon Canova used to take parties out. He basically... a lot of professional men, doctors, attorneys, and that sort. And he had a shrimp boat, but he would take them occasionally just to go out fishing.
Yeah.
And some of them would get on there, and if they got a little too rowdy with the booze or whatever, he'd go get him about a foot-long strip of thick-cut bacon, and he'd tie a string in the middle of it, and he would swallow it and pull it in and out of his belly or top of his stomach or whatever, but he would swallow it and pull it back out with a string. And needless to say, he didn't have any trouble too long, you know. He would do the same thing, I understand, with oysters, good-sized apple.
Yes, sir.
Raw. Big oysters. He would tie a piece of twine, fishing twine, in the middle of it, and he would swallow it. Of course, in those days, they never heard of monofilament. You know, there wasn't monofilament. It was all twine. Mm-hmm. But stories about her, I remember them telling me of my father and a bunch of them being down on a boat one particular time with a loose lady or whatever. And I don't know if you've ever seen a door that goes on a shrimp boat or not.
Sure,
it's pretty big.
Yep.
They saw her snatch a side of chain off one.
I told you I was jealous of him. I've already told him.
Ran them all off the dock. They were jumping overboard and going off the dock, and the ones that got caught at a dead end dove overboard. They were in the water.
That's you that did that?
Yes, sir. You know what? They used to, one of the biggest laughs they'd get out of telling tales on John and I, they'd go down the street and Helen said, hey, guess what? Jerry and John on talking and kissing terms today. He talks and she tells him what to kiss. But you know, the other wives would come to me. I'm going to do this and I'm going to... They never would do a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Me, I was me and I didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever tell him about William Wells?
I didn't tell him about Wild Bill.
Wild
I wanted you
Wells.
To tell him.
Yeah. Here's another one. He got the nickname Wild. He was pretty wild.
Yes, he was.
Kind of a bully whenever he drank. I remember a little boy playing pinball machines, and they had a place called the Gasser down there in Mayport, which is where Monty's Marina is now. And it's up on stilts. And I remember so many people I saw him just beat the you-know-what out of, grab them by the seat of the pants and throw them out the back of it into the water. You know, there was water and mud bank there and all, but... he actually lassoed a shark one time offshore. He had some people out fishing like that, and he actually lassoed a sore. I remember another story they told on his son, Billy, young Billy Wells. He was trolling behind a shrimp boat. Shrimp boat was running in, and he had a feather out with a strip of bonito something on it, and he had the line wrapped around his hand a number of times. And normally you have a bungee cord or a piece of rubber or something to prevent the shock of that fish hitting it so it won't either pop the line or snatch the hook out of the fish's mouth. But it cut this guy so deep and so wide that he still swears to this day when it cut him, it probably went a quarter, 3/8 inch into his hand. You know, just, I mean, you can imagine cotton twine, you know, burning through your hand, but swears that they stuck his hand in a cracked, you know, took an egg and cracked it, is all that they had, no medication or anything, and poured it over it, and it actually cooked the egg. They said they had to dig pieces of egg out of the cut. That's still told the room they port right now.
Tell about Chidi, Florida. Now, I know you know some of the tales about Chidi.
Back to this Bill Wells, it was also kind of a sad note when he was drag racing with another young guy there from Mayport and went to pass him on the right and kill two little twin boys that were living out at Mayport when the Navy had first started their housing out there. And I remember the story of the police when they arrived that he had both those dead kids in his arms.
Yeah, he would have never done that.
They said he went off to prison, but he's back.
They didn't keep him in prison too long. You know, he was paroled into Wassy Frank's custody, but he had to stay in Fort Myers. He fished out of Fort Myers. I guess he still is. I don't know.
He is still down there, just as crazy as he ever was, but I don't think he drives
anymore. The tricks those fishermen.
What about
Chidi,
Floyd, now?
Tell some of the tales you know about
Chidi. Oh, Chidi, up here at Silver's Liquors, right? I never will forget this one. This was recent years here. You ought to get that. I have a recipe for bottled hell. It's a dattle pepper sauce that it's. Have you ever tried any?
No, I haven't.
It's the best. I've got some in there. I'll let you try a little. Yeah. It's excellent. But anyhow, he was quite a character. I mean, when you thought that the hippies and all this growing the marijuana and all, Chidi had his own marijuana garden, and he talked about the birds getting in it. He would take his pot seeds, supposedly, and throw them out there. And naturally, I don't think the seeds would do too much of anything, but he swears that all the birds would fly into telephone poles and knock them out and all stab his garden. But anyhow, he I don't know what he did for money. After he quit shrimping, you know, but he seemed to always have enough.
His wife works. She works for the people that we pay her. Our taxes pay her salary, Johnny. She goes and finds out about the mosquitoes.
Anyhow, he was riding around with a friend of mine, Doug Parker, and they found an old birdcage down on the river shore and went and picked the birdcage up and took it to Titi's house, and somehow or another they got some wood and put it in the bottom of it because it's all rusted and everything. They kind of cleaned it up a little bit. And they went down to Frankie Harrell's mama. What's her name?
Anna.
Anna Harrell's in Lily Thomas's house and found some little biddies and chickens running on the river shore because they always had chickens. And they put one in this cage, and they went up here to Silver's Bar and a bunch of Navy people in there and all. They started telling them it was oyster rooster. That's right. They put some oyster shells. Anyhow, they sold it for $100, and needless to say, they drank all night. And, you know,
and that is a true story. That is
oyster
no
rooster.
Malarkey. You
put
don't.
Put some oyster shells in there, you know.
Kit, don't tease him with the kitty.
Told them that it was an oyster rooster. I know they got $100 for it. I know that was a true story.
And out of all the shrimpers in Mayport, Chidi Floyd, I was always afraid of him for some reason or other because Chidi didn't care what woman it was. He was going to make a pass at it. The first time I ever met him, John and I walked into Mr. Jimmy Hoy's after John came from overseas. Mr. Jimmy Hoy and Ms. Hoy owned a bar out close to the Mayport Navy Base, what they call East Mayport. And I can see Chidi now eyeing me up, and I say, "Hey, John, who's your woman?" And John says, "This is my wife, Chidi." And he says, "Oh, excuse me, but I don't know. That just, he was good.
Yeah.
I used to see him in the grocery store, and I'd duck to keep, because I never knew what he was going to say. I never did, but he was good. He really was. I told this one here.
David.
This one here.
I told him that there were no better people in the world than those Mayport people.
I remember another time we were heading shrimp when we were kids. That's how we would buy candy and all like that. Yeah. We'd go down there and head shrimp. Matter of fact, when my father was lost, I remember heading shrimp with her right next to me. You know, for 2 cents a pound is what they paid now. Now I understand they get like a nickel or a dime or something.
Yeah.
And they weighed the heads now instead of the shrimp for some odd reason. But where the shrimp go down the trough, there's always 1,000 mullet and catfish and everything, and somebody's always there, kids, with a fishing line. And when you get a catfish on, needless to say, you have to be careful. And I remember, I don't know if you ever remember this or not, but Deborah, my sister, caught a catfish, a nice catfish, and she asked Chidi, had come in to unload, she asked him to get it off. And I remember him taking that catfish and swinging it at the trough, and the catfish didn't hit right. The twine hit instead of the fish and bounced back, and that thing went to the hilt. into his neck.
Yeah, you know what a catfish fan's
are
like.
They're barbed like this. Well, yeah. I saw him grab that catfish, and I mean, go. It would have taken three men to pull that thing out. And needless to say, when you pull going against those barbs, you know, the thing. But he wore that, so you don't even know about that. He wore that scar for years and years and years. I mean, I would always see it and bring up the story when I was seen. I remember another time, I don't know if you remember this or not, that I had been fishing and caught a giant, real big, what they call a cell cat, that, where the prongs are on the catfish. He's got extra, like, fin. They call it a cell cat or a channel catfish.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was dragging him home, and my little Jimmy, my brother, middle brother Jimmy, came up and saw that catfish, and I was dragging him, and it was probably 30 feet of line. You know, I wasn't going to take him off because he was so big, and I knew it was a catfish. I was probably 9 years old. Jimmy was probably seven. Jimmy saw him jump a little bit and ran up there and was barefooted and stomped him. And you remember that? And that catfish went all the way through his side.
Do you remember when I was pregnant with, I don't know what it was, Debbie or...
And the old trick on a catfish, by the way, on that was to take a penny and wrap in a piece of bacon and put it on. And it, whether it be a nail or a catfish puncture, you will not believe. I mean, you
and
will
onions.
Not believe what it will do. Now, I've heard the onion,
onion
thing, but I personally, a number of times, took the penny and a slice of bacon about this big. You put the penny inside of it and just fold it over. Put it right to the puncture wound, and you will not believe the next day it's like nothing ever happened to you.
Huh, I've never
heard
that
all
before.
The swelling. Yeah.
Do you remember the day your dad and I drove up from the grocery store and Fuller King come out, and I was pregnant, and he says, Jerry, don't you go in there. He had got a fish hook in his finger that went all the way through.
Oh, gosh.
And how did your dad get it out?
He took, what happened was there was mullet all around the dock, and you can't take a mullet, and you need a little ball of bread after, you know, 30 years. I've learned the trick of how to catch a mullet. But at the time, I'd see all these nice fish swimming all over the place, and I was there with a hand line. Like I say, you never heard of rod and reels. You might have had a cane pole, you know, with a piece of line on it, but I couldn't catch them. My hook was about that big, and I had probably 10 ounces of lead, and I couldn't figure out why when I threw my line and it sunk. These mullet always dump out the water, why I couldn't catch one. So I finally took that lead, and then, I mean, after hours of this, and I got so mad, I reared back, and I threw it as far as I can. Well, the hook came when it did and went through my hand.
Yes.
Never will forget that. But you take and, you know, you make another hole with the point of the hook, and you cut the eyelet off. And then, you know, just pull it on through. I remember that.
But John got it out with no problem whatsoever, but I know they wouldn't let me go in there because I'd have probably passed out.
And the other time, I remember when I was a little boy, and Eloise, who was a maid of my grandparents, did you tell him about
Yeah, the whole family stayed with the whole family.
She, a man she used to live with, they called him Woodman.
Yeah.
Woodman was called that because he had been cut and beat and hit more than you could ever. He's had scars from head to toe, and he would never keep him down. He was still alive, so they called him Woodman because of all the scars all over him. But I remember she came around the corner and said, David Harris is going to kill Woodman. And I remember I took off. I was on the way to Sunday school, and I ran around the corner. And I got down to Pino's, little in the black section of Mayport. There was a bar. It's called Pino's, and that Woodman was laid there with a shot through the heart.
Yeah.
Never will forget it.
Yeah,
the flies and all over him. Shot him dead in the heart.
Yeah.
Finally killed
Eloise used another thing used to tickle me so much. Speaking of Pino, he run a colored jug joint.
Yeah.
One of them. They had another one up there, and I forget that man's name. But Eloise would say, you know, Mr. Jerry, said Mr. Frank, that was a constable, said, you know, said, them people of mine, them black people, they standing there, I ain't scared of nobody. I ain't scared of Mr. Frank. Says, and Miss Jerry said, by that time, Mr. Frank will stick his head in the door and say, all them niggas will turn white. She's told me that so many times. I used to, even after I moved to the beach, I'd go get Eloise once a week and bring her, let her come and iron for me, and she and I'd sit down and have breakfast together. I'd cook for her because she deserved it, but she's in the Eartha White nursing home now. Mm-hmm. I went to see her 1 year just before Christmas, and it's in such a bad part of town, I won't go back. It's at Moncrief. Mm-hmm. Do you know that area?
Yeah, I've been there.
Do you know that Eartha White nursing home? Well, you know what impressed me about that place so much? It was absolutely immaculate. And the help, the nurses and all, were so friendly and so nice. I was just amazed.
Did you tell him about Billy Bensel?
No.
Billy Denzel's a guy a couple of years older than me.
Yeah.
If you leave this area and you have to make a special trip back, right now he's in...
I think he is.
He's in Texas, I think, right now. The Mayport people, the shrimpers, just started scalloping in recent years, and it's a very lucrative business, mm-hmm. and they've pretty well knocked out some of the big beds here already. So they sent him to Panama, and some of the natives in Panama, are the people that were scalloping by hand and all like that, got upset the fact that boats were starting to come over there. So they cut the nets and burned them, and guy that's in charge, Sam Hagen, owns the company, but one of the Panamanians who he had hired for him working down there came up to Billy Denzel and handed him one of those little Uzi machine guns or whatever they're called.
Yeah.
And he said, "Here, this is just in case." And Billy said, the only case I want is my damn suitcase." And needless to say, he got his suitcase and he came home. He just took off to Texas to get back on his boat again. But Billy Denzel's the biggest liar that's ever come out of Mayport. We've got some good ones. We've got some of the best in the world. Me, one of them. But I mean, Billy's much better than I am. But I remember I asked him recently, and you think that Yogi Berra was good? This guy will give you a book, and he's unbelievable.
He's so dry and droll.
I said, I want to know one, and I harass him. Well, I stay on him consistently. Yeah. Terry will tell you, we have him and his wife over for dinner occasionally, and I said, "Do you really lie as damn much as everybody says you do?" I said, "I know you're the biggest liar I've ever met." I said, "But do you lie that much, Billy?" And just his honest and straightforward answer, he said, "I'm going to tell you one damn thing." He said, "The only time I lie is when there's somebody with me or I'm by myself." That's Billy Denzel. And I asked him, about 3 or 4 years ago, he told me, he said, "Johnny Gavigan," he said, "I'm going to tell you something." He says, "I made a promise to myself, and I even told the Lord that I'm going to never lie again." And I said, "Billy, I remember one time about 10 years ago, I said, I was in Mayport, and I said, I was sitting down there talking to the Parker boys, bunch of 3 or 4 brothers. And I said, you came down there and said you'd been to the Coquina Pits, which was in East Mayport out where the base is, there's some pits, now it's Hannah Park and all mm-hmm, that stuff. Mm-hmm. I said, you told me that you saw an alligator in there that was at least 18 feet long. And I said, I found that very hard to believe. I said, now that you're not lying anymore, I said, I want you to tell me the truth about that. I said, was it really an 18-foot alligator? He said, "Johnny Gavigan, I'm going to tell you the truth. It was an old cabbage tree that fell down, was floating middle of the lake." But that's, this guy, he will tell you some stories that you wouldn't believe. Remember Maurice Moody biting the guy's ear off in Texas?
Yes.
The guy wanted to fight him, and they met out in the middle of the
street. He was not from Mayport originally, but he married a Mayport girl.
He told that guy from Texas, he said, "I'm just an old gray mule from Mayport. If you want a ride, get on." And they said he bit that gear's... The guy beat him pretty bad to begin with, but they said he finally got hold of the guy's ear. Said he bit it slap off the guy. took it all away.
And we used to have our own broadcast system in Mayport because some of the people had sets that they could listen to the shrimpers talking.
Radio
sets. Yes, yeah. And so they had told me John was on the boat with Joe Nick. I forget the name of the darn thing. But I knew that this was a Sunday night. I knew he was going to be in around midnight. I'd already heard it. Someone had come by and told me. So I was standing at my front door when I saw the thing go by. I could tell it because the red light on top was way up and I could see it. Well, I went on back to bed because I knew it would be about an hour before they got situated enough, the boat cleaned up and all. So he comes to my window and he says, "Geraldine, oh, Geraldine." And I didn't like to be called Geraldine. Yeah. And I said, "Who is it?" He says, "One of your old boyfriends." I says, "Wait just a minute, George, and I'll let you in." And his name's John now. I had a hard time making him believe that I was awake. And knew he was coming in. I kid you not. We did little things like that to each other.
Roger.
He was jealous of me and I was jealous of him.
Yeah.
And I used to, I'd just get heartbroken when he'd be jealous of me. And his sister told me, said, "Jerry, if you'll stop crying and give him as good as he sends, you'll do better." So I learned to do that. And he'd say, "You see something you like?" I'd say, "Yeah, put me off and come back in about an hour or two." But I tell you, we really, had a good time, good life together. And like I say, I think if he had lived, and this poor man I'm married to now, he won't fuss with me. Very seldom, but when he says Jerry in a certain tone, I know to behave myself. We were playing cards just before you called. And I said, you go right after me. We're not even playing for money, and you've got to win. Why? Why? I was telling about poor Lou, about opposites attracting. I don't either. He's a good man. He really is.
End of side one. Interview continued on side two. This is the start of side two of tape two of the July 26 interview with Geraldine Mardrum and John Gavigan, Jr.
You weren't born when this happened, but you know, when I first went to Mayport, did you ever remember Henry Brazil?
Yeah, I remember. He still lives here.
I thought Henry was dead.
Or Joe Brazil.
I'm not talking about Joe. This Henry was their uncle, I think. But I told him about the time that he brought the mullet to me, and because they had sand on them, I thought they were dirty and nasty and rotten and everything else, and I took them over to your grandpa. And he laughed, and he thought that was the funniest thing to him. He told me, he says, Jerry, if anybody else gives you any of these, you bring any they bring to you.
Oh,
I'll take
right?
them, yeah.
I remember one time that my father sent me home with two big red snapper, and I held up ferry traffic for so long, thinking I'd caught them off the dock. I was dragging them home by
yeah.
Then there was Chichima.
He said they hadn't even mentioned him in Mayport.
Bosco. He had a monkey named Bosco.
Yeah.
And the Humane Society eventually took the monkey away from him because the monkey wouldn't say, I love you, Uncle Chichima, because he hit the monkey so many times he had knocked half of his teeth out. So he got rid of the monkey and got him a pony. When you talk about funny, when he would come down to Monty's Marina, and he was getting on up in age, and his eyes were going on, he had cataracts, and he would always come up to me and say, give me a quarter. And I said, you remember me? He said, hell yeah, I remember you. You're that Jones boy, you know. And I was a Gavigan, naturally, and I think he knew it, but it was just joking with me, you know. But it was the funniest thing to see him on that little old Shetland pony, old pirate-looking guy with the old rough beard, you know, and had old Portuguese hat on and old dirty bib overalls and going down that road with one of those little old camel cigarettes sitting down and looked like he was asleep, you know, and the stirrups were only that far from the ground, you know. And about 20 dogs. He'd always come down there and get his dogs, and here come ducks behind the dogs, you know. And it was like a parade. People coming across on the ferry would pull over to watch this, you know. But he would come down there, and I remember one of the last times that I saw him, Willie Strickland, or BJ, or one of them, had sent, did you tell him about Jack Rochester?
I haven't yet, but I'm
Jack
going
Rochester
to.
Was a guy that was never married. He grew up in Mayport, and he was probably 20 years older than I am, 25 years maybe. And he stole women's underwear off the line.
Yeah.
That was his thing.
Guess who was the only woman in Mayport that caught him and made him give them back?
Never dated any women or anything. Yeah. He was a big, tall, real thin. He had a little small head on him. Had one of those hatchet-like faces and no chin, you know?
Yeah.
He always had a cigar.
Yep.
And he had beady little eyes and big, thick mustache. And he wore one of those Portuguese hats, you know, and a long-sleeved blue shirt and, like, navy-type jeans and the brogan-type. Shoes. Never shrimped or anything. He'd just go out fishing on the party boats, you know. And I remember I used to see him walking to Mayport, you know, and he'd be out here at Mayport Road or walking where the Y is. One goes to the base and one goes to Mayport down here. And I'd see him and say, Jack, you'd need a ride. And he'd say, hell no, I don't need no goddamn ride. He said, I'm going to Mayport and I'm in a hurry. Get your ass away from me. You know? And he was in a hurry. He didn't want no ride. But, I mean, he was a little off, you know. And I remember one time he was pumping gas for Hoke Eberhardt, where the Northeast Florida Seafood is now, that co-op place. And Margaret King, he used to have a little 5- and 10-cent store, a little grocery store there in Mayport. Occasionally, they would need gas for their lawnmower or maybe their car or whatever, and there wasn't any gas stations in Mayport, but you could get gas at Hoke Eberhardt's. So Jack used to pump gas down there, and he always carried a transistor radio, too, when they first came out. Yeah. I mean, he had one of the first ones, you know. He'd always be walking along, bopping with that.
Yes,
I mean,
sir.
You know, worse than any black you've ever seen with the ghetto blast, because he was one of the first. But he was all decked out there and had that little cigar, and was out, you know, getting some sun, and Margaret King came up there, and she says, Jack, can you get Miss Margaret some gas? He just laid there, you know, and she went up there, and she shook him. Jack, said, Miss Margaret needs some gas. And he jumped up, he said, gas, kiss my ass, pump your own goddamn gas. Woke him up. Hello, lady. Tony Mayer on the winter boat, on the boats we were telling you about, the first one fishing, they were Catholics, you know.
Yeah.
And they would take out all these nuns occasionally, and they took a bunch of them, and Jack was like, he wasn't really a mate. I think he went out when they had jackpots, he would enter it, and always, he was a good fisherman, he'd catch a big fish and win the jackpot, and that's how he lived a lot of the time. And guy had foul language like you've never heard.
Yeah.
They took all these nuns out.
It's just like in saying good morning to you.
He didn't mean any harm or derogatory.
This was another
one. Just the way he was, but... Remember, they took all those nuns out from Bishop Kenny because the Bills were very staunch like Catholics. And I remember Tony Mayer, and he had one of the worst mouths in Mayport. He was running this winter boat, and he was GD this and GD that and SOB. And
yes,
I remember Jack Rochester. Tony Mayer told the story in the little where the Burrs used to have that little restaurant where the winter dock was. That Tony started all that cussing and screaming and all like that, and Jack Rochester went up to the head lady there, you know, Sister Superior so-and-so, and said, Sister, you can't mind that crazy son of a bitch. Says he cusses like a son of a bitch all the goddamn time, you know, and just cussed to the next. Don't mind him, Sister. Just use the most foul language.
And it was just simple with them. I mean, it was just like I'm telling you good morning.
Back to my story, was Chichimo.
No, wait, tell me about that name first.
Where Chichimo. Mama, how do you know?
I don't know how
that?
He got that name. I couldn't. His name was Earl Singleton.
Yeah, Earl Singleton.
Now, maybe some of the Singletons there, Raymond, or some of them could tell you. I don't know.
I don't know where he got that name, Chichimo.
But his name was Earl.
And I've heard the story how he got it, and I cannot recall. But Jack Rochester, like I say, being the character he is, and always carried a knife on his side, and he would flip it in a minute, you know, especially around some of the black people over there that would harass him because they thought he was funny, you know.
Yeah, he was.
But I remember one of the last times, either B.J. or Willie Strickland, that owned the Strickland restaurants at one time, sent him a bottle of Canadian Club down there. And he had been out fishing all day, and he got his bottle, somebody delivered it to him, you know. And he was cleaning his fish and had his bottle sitting up there, and here comes Chichimo wanting a drink. Well, Jack wouldn't let him take a drink out of his bottle. He said, you go get you a GD cup somewhere, and I'll give you some. So here he comes with a Dixie Lily cup, you know. And him and Jack sat there and got drunk and cussed each other out. And Jack threatened him with that knife, which he had never heard a flea, you know. But if you could have seen one of the sports fishing boats come in and had two amberjacks, probably 40, 50 pounds apiece. Chichimo tied one by one tail and one around the other tail of the fish and grabbed it in the middle. It was about that much space and started dragging them down the dock. Now, Chichimo at this time probably weighed 130 pounds. Those two fish probably weighed just about as much as he did. And if you could have seen Chichimo trying to throw these two amberjack over the top of that Shetland pony with the dogs chasing the pony, the ducks and behind the dogs, and out in the middle of the road, and he finally got one foot in the stirrup, and there goes the pony. Here's the amberjack clapping like this. Here's the 20 dogs chasing him, and then everybody else, all the, you know, from Blacktown, the dogs, all every mutt in Mayport was chasing that pony, and here's the amberjack flapping down the road, and ferry traffic's pulling off all sides of the road. It was the funniest, and him hanging on the side
of
the horse.
Yes, sir. He was a character. And Jack Rochester, do you remember his singing all the time?
Oh, yeah.
He'd be going home at night, and he was the same thing. Oh, my darling, in the moonlight, over and over and over.
Going down the road.
And speaking of drawers, he had a drawer tree. And one day I had hung clothes out on the line, and Judy's yellow drawers, a pair of yellow drawers I'll never forget. And I had hung them out on the line. Well, I went back in the house, and our dining room was a sitting room, too. We had a parlor, but it was a sitting room, too. And I happened to look out the windows, and I saw Jack, and I knew he'd been to that clothesline. And I run out my front door. Frank Bronson was over to your grandpa's. I think we're fixing to have court there or something.
Yeah.
And I knew he had, first of all, I ran to the clothesline. I saw the space, empty space. And I yelled, I said, Jack, you better give me those drawers. Big old tall thing, you know, he never broke stride. And Parnell's used to have these posts around it for people to park up against. They're not there now. And I says, you better give them to me. I said, if you don't, I says, I'm going and tell Mr. Brunson he's over at the house right now, and you're going to jail. I said, give me those drawers. He never broke stride. He reached in his pocket. He put those drawers on one of those posts, and he kept going. And I laughed. I couldn't help but laugh. I said, you crazy thing. Well, of course, word got out. Jerry Gavin's the only one that ever made Jack give the drawers back.
Yeah, I saw Nora Brown, the lady that used to run the post office, yeah. Talk about catching him out on her clothesline with a broom, and she beat him with that broom all the way down the road. Sure
they said he had planted them under a tree. Now, yeah. Whether it was true
planted
or not.
Yes,
now, I don't know whether it was true or not.
Yeah, we found a place one time where he buried them.
Well, were you with that bunch that went to the cemetery and tried to rob his grave one time?
Not Jack's, no. We were in the cemetery, and the police thought we were trying to, you know, rob a grave, mm-hmm. or dig up a grave, which we weren't. We were all just out there drinking some beer underage.
Speaking of Chichi, my one tale I remember about him, John had made me mad the night before. He'd tell me, honey, I'm going down to the dock for a few minutes. I'll be back after a while. Maybe he'd be back in 2 hours, maybe 3 hours, maybe 4 hours. And anyhow, he'd pulled that the night before, and here come Chichimo knocking at my door, and I went to the door, and I looked, and he says, Jerry, here's John's hat. He left so-and-so, and I took that hat, and I pitched it out in the street, and I said, you're going to be next. He looked at me, and of course he went and told it all, but I didn't care. I didn't care at all. I was me, and that was it.
Tell him about Beanie Andrews.
Oh, God, have mercy.
She hadn't told you about Beanie?
No.
Beanie spent some time in a Chattahoochee in the psychiatric ward. But to talk to the guy, you'd think he's one of the most intelligent mm-hmm. guys around when he's not drinking.
Yeah.
But I remember one night we'd all been up here to Pete's Bar, and I took a bunch of people out to Mayport to see, to go David King. Had a big shrimp boat he was running. Everybody's getting on the boat. Everybody had a few drinks, you know. And it started raining. And I looked down there at the end of the dock, and there's somebody passed out at the end of the dock, and it was Beanie Andrews out there sleeping in the rain. And I woke him up, and he went, what? You know, looking all around, and he says, we're making a trip, all these people going. He said, I want all you sumbitches right here to know right now. He said, I'm Beanie Andrews, I'm a paratrooper, and I'm crazy as hell, and I got the papers to prove it. He put out his release papers now. He is so proud of the fact that he had been in this nut house before. Mm. But what all Beanie do? What's some of the,
Beanie
the
was...
time he was in the Cape down here, fishing in the Cape. And he went to sleep and left a frying pan on and burnt somebody's boat up. So they kicked him off the mm-hmm. boat. So he said he was going across a park and he saw a newspaper blow by. And he grabbed it and picked it up and started going through the long ads and saw a heavy equipment operator wanted. So he went to this site that wasn't too far away, he claims, and they put him on a bulldozer. Said, Andrews, you know how to run that? He said, yes, sir, I sure do. He said, well, get up there and start leveling that mound out right there. He said he don't know how in the world he got it started. He said, but he did get it in reverse. And he said it started going back over one of these hills, you know. And he said he was shoving and mashing everything, trying to get it going. And said he turned around and looked behind him, and he saw a big lake behind him. He said he jumped off and said he had sand all in his nostrils, his mouth and everything. Said he turned around and looked, and all he saw was broof, broof. He said that bulldozer had gone in this lake and it was underwater, and said he ran up and he climbed to the top of the hill and saw all these people running toward him. He said he rolled back down the hill, ran around the edge of the lake and went out there and grabbed the guy that had the red flag. It was waving traffic down, and he said it stood right in the middle of the road. And he waved the first man down that came by in a car and jumped in the car with him and took off right back down to the shrimp boat and begged him a job. Needless to say, his construction job was short-lived.
Do you remember why Beanie had his nervous breakdown? Do you remember mm-hmm. what... During World War II, he was overseas in the European area. Mm-hmm. And his mother died, and they would not let him come home for her funeral. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it was during World War II. I'm almost sure it was. And he was fine up until then, and they think that did something to him. I don't know why they wouldn't let him come home. I don't know whether things were going real bad at that particular time. I can't remember. But Beanie, it was not World War II. It was the Korean War. Mm. I thought it was. But anyhow, they would not. He could not come home. And that hurt him so much. Well, now, when Beanie was a little boy, I'm the one. He had always tried to hang around the jug joints, and he used to have one down at Seminole Beach. Of course, you wouldn't know that place today because the Navy's got it. But I'm the one that used to, and I'm so against this now until it's pathetic, but I would be the one to sneak him a glass of beer. He was underage. He was about 14, but I would do it. But I wouldn't now. I wouldn't give an underage person a drink for anything in this world. He couldn't get me to. Mm-hmm. But he was, Beanie, he's gotten off the booze, and he would look so good. I'd see him at the beach and go up and hug him. I'd see him if he was dirty and hug him, as far as that goes, because I don't forget. I know there's a certain woman used to live in Mayport, and during this thing with John, people would come in and they'd say, if there's anything I can do, just call me, let me know. And I know they meant it.
Yeah.
This woman came to my house and picked up my children's clothes and my clothes, and she took them to her house, and she washed and she ironed them, and she brought them back. And I'd always been told that she was a thief, that she would take from you, and she was dirty. But to this day, if I see her, she gets a hug from me, because I will never forget that. Mm-hmm. I don't forget when kindness has been shown to me. And at that time, that's what I needed. Instead of saying, can I do something, she did it without asking.
Yeah. Who's that?
Betty Flynn.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
When your father was lost, about she didn't ask, could she do anything? She picked the clothes up and took them home, washed and ironed them, and brought them back. But there's some, that was a good life in Mayport. It's just like I told him, had your father lived, I'd probably still be married to him. But I tell you, we had a good, those almost 15 years were hilarious in a lot of ways.
What were some of the other old families? We're talking about some of these local characters.
Gosh, well, Billy Bensel, for sure. Billy Wells, for sure.
Bill Bensel, Billy's father, was not from Mayport originally, but he married a Drew, and they were from Mayport.
Yeah, the Drews. Ruth Capoe would be excellent for him to talk
yes,
to.
Yes, oh, Ruth can remember a lot. That's Ethel Thompson's sister.
What's her last name? Though?
C-A-P-O. Wait a minute, did she remarry after Leighton died?
I don't think so.
Did you know I saw her recently? She had to have a breast removed.
I know.
Yeah.
Raymond Singleton, have you been to Singleton's?
Yeah, I've met
down
Captain
there?
Raymond. Yeah.
Have you?
He's usually been pretty busy.
Well, Raymond's not.
Dan, his
best.
Brother's another real good one you would want to talk to also. Dan was, we've got pictures of Dan with my father together.
Mm-hmm, when they were young
we
boys.
Were young guys, yeah.
So many of them, they would be like Teedy. He would be one
Walter
of them.
Walter Floyd.
Walter would be good.
Teedy's brother, he's around. You'll find him at Monty's Marina about any afternoon that the boats are going out. Gerald Pack is another one that has Miss Becky Seafood. Gerald's an excellent
As does source. Walter still own, this was Walter's boat. Does he still own the Wynema?
No, Wynema's been gone.
Speaking of Teedy, the only shrimp boat he ever owned, guess what he named it? The Bushwhacker. Yes, sirree. And that was typical. That was typical of Teedy.
Does Walter Floyd work at Monty's, or he just
no?
Sort of
he just goes
there
down there to watch what comes in.
How old the guy is he?
Walter's probably 60 to 65.
He was almost as old as your father, John, and he would be about 65, 60 to 65. He's a good one to talk to, because he can tell you some tales that'll. And Booty Singleton. Have you heard his name mentioned yet?
No, Booty?
Yep, Booty's the one. I can't understand why they didn't mention him. Booty started, he started as a beach fisherman. And he's the one that, have you ever seen this seafood, frozen seafood called Singleton Fish Company?
Yeah, sure.
That's Booty.
Oh, yeah.
Booty made it real good. I don't know how. I guess he started out, like I say, beach fishing. He went to Tampa. He bought a fleet of shrimp boats, named most of them after his children. And he was a good-looking man, but he had a speech
impediment. He had some of the shrimp boats that he started calling them A1 and A2, and just multi-millionaire.
In 1955, I went to Tampa to meet John. He'd come back from Camp Peachy. And Booty was decided to take us out, John and me and another couple, and then Bob Parker, whose wife wasn't with him. And we went to the Columbia restaurant. Well, I don't know whether you've ever been to the Columbia restaurant in St. Augustine
or not.
Yeah. Well, have you been to the one in Tampa? It has seven dining rooms. But when Booty came in, excuse me, they really treated him nice because he spent good money there. And I'll never forget the night that he took us there and how good the food was. I had never eaten what they pompano in a paper bag.
Mm-hmm.
They call it something else. But it was absolutely delicious. And after we had done that, he took us to the stock car races, which I didn't care about, but I went. Then he takes us to a nightclub. And I had never seen these girls that dressed skimpily. This woman had a bra on that was beaded and all, but it had lights on it. And they put me up against where I could see the best, you know.
Yeah.
And they did it deliberate, I know, because I'm sitting there. And she got around me and was shaking and shaking, and she got right up me. She says, "What's the matter, honey? Don't you have two just like it?" And I said, "Well, yes, ma'am, I have, but I can't get mine to work like you got yours working." And Booty just keeled over because he didn't know I was going to say that. But it did amaze me because I had never seen anything like that. And that one night, I'll never forget, but Booty killed himself here a year or two ago. I think he was sick.
Yeah.
And I called Penny, his daughter. She lives in Selma, Marina, and I called Penny and I told her how much I thought of Booty and about that one night that I would never forget that he took us. And Booty always paid. You know, he started beach fishing. He used to take fish up to Ponte Vedra. Had to go in the back door.
Mm-hmm.
After he made it good, he rented the very best up at Ponte Vedra so he could go in the front door. I kid you not. And he would also take some of the shrimpers from Mayport. He would charter a plane and fly them to, where do they gamble?
Las Vegas?
Las Vegas. He sure would. He didn't forget, I don't think he did. I know he didn't forget me because
some people he might have.
But
in his old age. I remember one time I went to see him for a job interview. I called him up to be a food broker for him, and he thought I was my father that had been dead for years.
His mind was
really
bad, John.
Kind of hurt my feelings. So I remember a time I saw him at the Holiday Inn up at the rooftop, and he sent the waitress over there to buy drinks, and I sent word, you know, what he could do with his drink. I don't care if his mind went or not. I kind of didn't have any mercy on him and sent word back over there and told him what he could do with the drinks. This was one Menorcan he went and buy in Mayport.
I don't think he bought the others. I really don't.
Robert Thomas. I remember Booty, you know, with all that money and everything, he was caught, him and Robert Thomas, with marijuana on him, getting on an airplane.
You kidding? Nah. What'd they do with him?
Well, he was downplayed. I think they fined him $200. There's no big deal at all. They had, I think, you know, a couple of joints, and that was it. But just the fact that, you know, these two guys, just Booty worth millions.
Back during those days,
there's a poor beach fisherman with him, Robert, you know, with about 15. How many kids has he got? 12, 13 kids. And here he is with the marijuana.
I told him about Miss Lily. I wished he'd go talk to Miss Lily.
Oh, you've got to go see that lady.
Yeah, other people have mentioned her, too. Yeah.
Go see her. Matter of fact, when you are leaving Mayport, say, from Strickland's, you go two blocks or a block down from Singleton's, and there's what's an old drugstore. There's an old block building on the right-hand side.
It's that blue one with doesn't look like anything's
happening.
That's happened.
It. Right. And right. They're right in back
there.
Of it.
There's shacks back there with goats running through them and chickens that you wouldn't think people even live there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they live.
And Miss Lily will never leave from there. I've told him about her daughters are clean and neat as pins, but she will never leave.
Too.
Like, mm-hmm. I know she is. When I see
but
her
like
at Bingo.
Her family, I know that, like Anna, her daughter, their house caught on fire here. I say here, not long. It's been 3 or 4 years ago. They've never got the wiring fixed. I run an extension cord from Miss Lily's to Miss Anna's house where they live. No screens in the windows.
Yeah.
They've got a son who I take fishing with me occasionally, Sydney, and we call him Loggerhead, and you got to meet him. Green teeth, all rotted out, and just a brute, like a no-neck type guy. Nicest guy you'd ever want to meet, you know, but likes those women. And he's got him a little small camper that goes on the back of a pickup, and he's got it up on blocks on the river shore, and that's his condominium on the river. Big enough to sleep in, nothing else, you know.
Yeah.
But when they get mad at him, his grandmama and Miss Lily will run him out, and that's where he goes and stays in this little camper.
Miss Lily is still pert and alert as you. I haven't seen her bingo for.
She busted her leg or something a while back, and I went over to see her, and matter of fact, I ate some chicken over there with him, and just as alert and sharp as, how old is she?
She's about 97 now. They did a write-up. They gave a birthday party at age 96. I tell you, that woman can play more bingo cards than I can play.
She's sharp as a tack.
And you talking about her leg? They had her leg popped up in a chair there one night.
At
that'd
bingo.
Been me. I'd have made such a to-do about my leg, I wouldn't have gone nowhere. Oh,
fantastically.
Boy.
I remember one time.
She's remarkable.
Daggone fire truck or something came through Mayport. She lost one of her kids, lost Sydney. You ever remember that?
Mm-mm.
And the siren scared him so bad he crawled up underneath the house, and they had all of Mayport looking for him. And he wouldn't come out until he heard that siren.
Jeez.
And we used to always tease Frankie's one of her sons. I don't know who Tina was.
That was.
We would call him Tina, and he'd say, "Won't you kiss Tina's ass?" And his mama would take a switch to him and beat him. Everybody used to come to our plum trees to get switches off.
That was Larry Harrell's, some of his people.
Was it?
Tina, yeah, I forget just what relation, but it was Anna's husband's
if
people.
If you ever have a hard time talking to anybody out there that you'd like to talk to, like Flynn, if they hear Johnny Gaffney.
Yes, sir.
Open their arms and let, you know, just welcome you in a second. There's some of them that's a little bit funny out there, like Raymond. He's got plenty of time to talk to you. He don't do a damn thing.
Raymond's not as pert and alert.
Raymond.
I tell you what.
Last time I went to see Raymond, he was moving the stove, so I didn't want to interrupt that.
Let me tell you what I did to Raymond one time. You got to hear this, John, with John's permission, because he was egging me on. They, Mr. Pettyjohn owned the telephone company in Mayport for years and years. Well, finally, Southern Bell bought him out. And when Southern Bell took over, I was over to your grandpa's house with everybody's approval. And I could, like him, he can fool me on the telephone sometimes until I start thinking. But I could kind of change my voice and talk like a man so much. And that particular time I called him, I said, "Mr. Singleton, this is Mr. Jones from Southern Bell Telephone Company. We're checking the lines down there, sir. Would you mind helping me out for a few minutes?" "Gotcha. Sure will." Yeah. I said, "Please step 10 paces back and whistle 3 times. And I can hear him counting off the paces. "Yes, sir." And he come on back and he said, "Did you hear me?" I said, "Yes, Mr. Singleton, I sure did. And from the sound of your whistle, you need to change your bird seed." And I whammed the telephone up. And, of course, that got all over Mayport. Well, they wouldn't tell him who did it, and I don't know whether they ever did tell him or not, but that was me. But like I say, your dad was there egging me on.
I called him one time and told him I wanted to smuggle some pot, and I remember that. See, he's all Raymond.
He's not as pert and alert as he used to be.
Raymond kind of got an attitude about Gerald Pack being a younger man on. Gerald's worked hard for his money.
Yes, he did. It wasn't handed to him.
Doesn't have. There's some guys out there, shrimpers, that occasionally will find a bail, and they'll make them some money to go buy them a home. Or, you know, it helps sometimes.
Yep.
But anyhow, Raymond always thought Gerald had possibly, you know, been in the smuggling thing. Gerald never has. Gerald's just
good
as
boy.
Honest as a day's long, believe me. But all of them around Mayport there put me up to calling Raymond up and making a deal with him. And boy, you should have heard him. You would have died on the phone. He was ready now. He was so against the fact that Gerald had done that. But when I called him, told him I had $100,000 for him, you should have heard him. He changed his tune. Boy, I'll tell you what, he changed his tune. Another thing, I called old Jack Parsons that was managing Strickland's restaurant. And, you know, told him that I was Colonel, our Commander so-and-so from Nayport Navy Base, and Jimmy Carter was coming there, and we didn't want it out that he was going to be there. We wanted to come have some dinner and not make a big kado out of
it. I know
the
shrimp
got rope and wired
there.
Off an area in the place. I mean, all of us went in there that night.
I know the shrimp,
around.
Yeah.
I've done so much stuff like that to those guys. Oh, David
he got it honest.
Brother. I called him up and told him that I was a representative for Boss Boots. That's what all the shrimpers wear, with the white boots that say B-O-S, you know, Boss. And I told him I wanted him. He's a big, burly fella. He's close to 300 pounds. And I wanted him to model the boots for us. And I said, we've got a $10,000 check. We don't want but about, you know, 3 days of your time. Boy, he ran all over Mayport. He told everybody. Oh, it was terrible. I felt so bad about it, I threatened to whip anybody that told him the truth. I said, I will personally.
Did they ever tell him?
No, thank God.
Well, that was like me.
I would have killed him. I felt so bad. I thought he would have thought it was a fluke or something. Instead, he went for it hook, line, and sinker. Went and told his mother, went and told everybody. Called people long distance up in Fort Myers and everything. I said, before they ever, ever, you know, would have tell him the truth, that there would be
when I told you I was brought up to laugh and get fun out of things. I mean, if I couldn't have survived. But I remember my cousin and I went through Mayport telling all the kids that Roy Rogers and Trigger and Dale Evans were coming over on the ferry. And you, let me tell you, do you remember that, John? They had a stampede down there. I kid you not.
Oh. I remember you going down to the boat, though, and hugging Joe DiMaggio. Joe DiMaggio.
Yeah,
and
I sure did.
Marilyn Monroe and Captain
Kangaroo. I don't know whether Marilyn, I didn't see her.
Yeah, Marilyn Monroe was there, Captain Kangaroo, and Joe DiMaggio rented a boat from
and Bear Bryant.
Somebody, and who?
Bear Bryant, coach of Georgia for years. Tell him who Bear Bryant was.
Bear Bryant wasn't no coach of Georgia.
Where was it? Alabama? Alabama. I knew it was one of them.
I think it was Wally Butts, not... I think it was Wally Butts.
It was Wally Butts. Now, Wally Butts was at Georgia, wasn't he?
Yeah.
But I shook Joe DiMaggio's hand, and that was a handsome man back... I went up...
End of tape 2. Interview continued on tape 3.